Hey, everybody, it's John, and thanks to everybody who helps us out every week by going to patreon.com/stealthisbeer and throwing a couple of bucks our way so that we can mail beers to our guests and have some fun conversations resulting from that. So if you're not already, go check it out. It's patreon.com/stealthisbeer. As Cass says, a little bit goes a long way, and we appreciate the support. Now, here come the sirens.
Steal This Beer, a candid weekly discussion about beer, over beer, by a couple of guys that think about beer way too much.
All right, hey y'all, it's 5 o'clock on Monday, and we are stealing beer. I'm Augie Carton. Hey, Cass.
What is that silent?
Way to jump in. That giant silent gap you just heard is where John Hall would belong if he wasn't flexing his Irish today and skipping us. Happy St. Patrick's Day, team.
Happy St. Patrick's Day.
So we are doing a quick St. Patrick's Day episode with our accomplice du jour, Ian Conboy of Lucky Hair Brewing. Say hi, Ian.
Hi, everybody. How you guys doing?
Good. Welcome to the show, man.
Thank you very much.
John Hall, in a world with a guy named Justin Kennedy and a brewery owner named Carton, Hall decided he was the most Irish of us and couldn't be bothered to check in on St. Patrick's Day.
Kennedy, does anyone know where he is?
I feel like he's right in your kitchen because, Justin Kennedy is about as Irish as a name can be, isn't it?
I don't know where he is.
What kind of name is Conboy? Because it feels like it's like a street name for a guy in an Irish tough gang.
Maybe it was tough. I don't know. I'm not tough, that's for sure. But yes, we are of a there is a section of Ireland, the O'Conboys. And yes, there is, at least today I should be drinking a lot more, I guess, if I was supposed to be celebrating St. Patrick's Day.
Are you not supposed to be? Is it court ordered? No celebrating St. Patrick's Day?
Oh, no. Actually, I'm by myself, so I don't know if I want to take it deep alone, you know.
Who wants to be that guy? Who wants to be that? It wasn't me. It was my religion. Made me drink all alone all day to the point of absurdity. Fair enough. So I got a quick talk about Lazy Kennedy. I got a quick write-up on you, Ian, from Cass, I think, which I assume means you use mobile canning.
That's correct.
Yeah. So we're not going to let that become the conversation. All I've heard is that your can seams are very tight and that your counter pressure is perfect and no DO. I've heard nothing about your actual brand or branding or brewing, but
I gave some good notes. I feel like here
you did not. Anyway, let's get into it. So
the canning is great.
The canning is perfect. That we know.
I love it.
Serious though, so you are a farm brewery in upstate. Tell us all about yourself. Give us 500 words or less on the business. What do you do?
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, we started in 2016 as a full-fledged New York State farm brewery here in the Finger Lakes. If you're unfamiliar with the Finger Lakes, it's like Western New York, a beautiful area known for wine country. We decided to follow suit as some other breweries in the area and opened up a spot then. Focusing on initially and now still diversity. So we're trying to capture every palate that comes through the door, making Belgians, we're making a stout year round, an IPA, sour beers weren't a thing then, but they are now. Trying to have a lot of diversity and not just the same stuff. So we were a 3-barrel system to begin. And within a year, we knew that we were in a tough spot. We put our, and Brian, you may have actually been in the barn. I think you were in the barn when we were first talking.
Doing a
3-barrel direct fire system from Stout with 8 3-barrel fermenters. And 5 of those 8 were just one beer that we were constantly producing. And we had a backwards model of starting with wholesale first and not even having a tap room. I don't know what we were thinking then. Anyway, we got a little bit, we got bigger. opened a second tap room in Ithaca, had to move to a different location for just production facility here in Watkins Glen, New York. We're by one of the NASCAR racetrack. Watkins Glen International is our neighbor. We're all up there by ourselves now doing about 1,500 barrels of beer a year, you know, from barrel aging, kettle sours, IPAs, New England's. Got a fooder in there, you know, marinating right now and everything in between. And yes, we do a lot of canning Ironheart. So I think that was about 450 words.
I think you nailed it. I couldn't have asked for it. If it was darts, it'd be good grouping. Nice little set.
Yes. Yes,
well,
thank you.
well played, sir.
Yes.
You said it so concisely, I might have tripped up myself on the focus, but you guys are farmhouse licensed, and how much are you doing any of your own farming? I know you I heard you say you're in a barn and all that, but what ingredients are yours and what ingredients are New York and what ingredients are German?
Our only ingredients that are ours are the ones that get delivered off of a truck. So we don't do any, you know, in the beginning we romanticized the idea of growing our own hops. And definitely not, you know, growing barley or anything like that, but our own hops. But soon we realized that we were already neck deep in way too much. So we did a lot more New York State grown ingredient beers. That's changed a little bit with a different climate now, unfortunately. But in the beginning, we were pretty heavy on that, working as much as possible. With everything from the New York Hop Guild sourcing our hops here locally and malt from, you know, places like Murmuration in Bloomfield, New York, and working with them heavily. But the business model has changed a little bit. We still do some New York State beers, but we kind of switch them around. So
got it. Understood.
Yeah.
How much of your beer are you doing in versus out? You know what I mean? Like how much is in the tasting room you've now opened versus area pubs?
I would say we're doing probably 75% is our wholesale business, and we self-distribute. So we manage about 300 different accounts. And we're sending our beer from Binghamton to Rochester out to Buffalo and, you know, anywhere in between. And then the two tap rooms that we have, one's in Hector, New York here on Seneca Lake. And then the other one is in Owego, you know, about an hour south of our production facility that we, you know, we obviously sell our beer there. So it's not as high as we would like, but we really, the wholesale game has still been pretty strong for us. And we're still finding ways to gain new tap handles and get out there with, you know, hopefully with just good word of mouth and our reputation, which is what we really try to make sure is as good as we can possibly make it.
Nice. Perfect. That's a good way to start a business.
yeah, we tried. That's for sure. I don't know. Sometimes you're like, wait, why did we do this? Or oh shit, we're way too. Yeah. We're like, well, why did we go the wholesale route? Like so heavily in the beginning, and we didn't know, you know, we really were like, I'm every other brewer that was a home brewer, except I was 31 living in my parents' basement making beer. Not really knowing what was going to be around the corner. And we were just like, hey, we can open a brewery and we can sell some beer. And then, you know, a few years later, you're like, oh shit, we're managing 100 accounts and invested all this money into a brewery. And man, we got to keep going, because if we don't keep going, then we're toast.
So. Yeah. It's funny though. So going back over the year, so, you know, as we go into this spring and summer, I am trying to figure out our path. And to be fair, I've been trying to figure out our path for 13 years, but what's been going on and what makes sense pivots almost as soon as you make a plan. I'm sure you know that from experience as well. But the thing this year that I keep wanting to scratch is, for 10 years, you know, I was told we have to grow, we have to put more beer out there. The only way to do this, the only sustainability, like, whatever. And, you know, the idea of closing a gap to industrial level production where things get cheaper has always been, you know, some part of, I think, every small business, no matter what you do's business model. But the Tommy Arthur retrenching and going smaller and whatever, right, I keep wanting to go back to you know, is there, rather than growing for success, is there a way to shrink to success? You know what I mean? Because like you're talking about, 100 accounts is a lot of phone calls to make. 1,000 accounts is 10 times more. You know what I mean? Is there a way to retrench as, here I am, here's a thing I thought would be fun this year? Because keep in mind, and I want to hear your inspirations here too. Typically, I do have a John Hall whispering terrible ideas in my ear, like the only way forward is to make a smoked cream ale that is 1.8% ABV. And I'll be like, yeah, let's do that. And then the market reminds me that's not what you do. Anyway, so where are you finding the most reward for where you've gotten at this point? Where are you like, yeah, that's the fun part. Like, that's the connection. That's what I loved about it when I started.
I feel like after 10 years of brewing, because I was, my background's in marine science, so I was a marine biologist before all of this. So, my first love was the ocean, and I love drinking beer. I mean, scientists do drink; they tend to drink a lot. Fridays were always packed at the bar at 3 o'clock. You know, when I was doing that thing, but I feel like after 10 years of this being in the industry, brewing, and just having my hands in all aspects of it, it's still the same thing as like hearing from people that say, man, that was a really good beer, or wow, I can't wait till come back and try this again, or oh man, I got to take this home to my friend Bill, because man, Bill loves this, or this is his favorite style, I think he's going to love it. Like seeing people enjoy it and hearing about it, that's what you get into the business for. You want to, if you're in the hospitality restaurant business, you want to make people happy,
right?
And to see 100 pints out there and everybody's happy and they're all having a good time, regardless of the amount of money you make, if you're able to do that and hopefully get somebody's party started or their day, you know, on a Sunday like today, we're having our hangover brunch here at our main tap room and trying to, you know, cure some people's bad decisions from last night with
on St. Patrick's Day.
Well, because it's the only Sunday,
move today,
you know?
Is to double down. The only move is to double down.
Yeah. Yes. And if I wasn't by myself and my house has a lot of windows here, one of the main streets in Watkins Glen, you know, maybe I would be doubling down myself. It's really just, you know, introducing people to new styles, like a 1.8% smoked cream ale. Like,
yeah,
you know, people would kind of be like, well, what the hell is John Hall talking about? This is a very weird thing. And maybe I also have a long story or a story of meeting John Hall for the first time, but I don't know if that's for the podcast or not, but I've met him a couple times. He's a really nice guy and great person. So I've had the pleasure of speaking to him a few times.
Well, yeah, you've definitely had the pleasure of speaking to him, but you don't know his black soul, where he's evil and sowing discontent wherever he roams. And I hope he listens to this and hears me say it. No. If you really, it's so there's a cute moment in my life, and this is probably with everybody I closely associate with, but we had a family end up living with us for the Superstorm Sandy shutdown because they were out of their house.
Yep.
And we basically tucked in here behind a tree, stuck in my house for about 8 days. And in the middle of that visit, very, very in our cups one night while all the kids were asleep, the wife said to the husband, what I love best about knowing them is when you realize she's the evil one. And that's kind of, John Hall plays that same role in my life. Sooner or later, every time we're out of town and all these stories are being told, somebody says, wait, it's Hall. And I'm like, yeah, see?
Yeah, I've been saying that the whole time.
No one believes me, but I swear to God, I'm never the one. Although, to be fair, he has matured over the last 10 years, and now he's the guy who gets us to go home safely. But a lot of our most famous bad nights was him going, you know, we could make one more stop where X, Y, and Z are. And I'm like, sure, we can do that. And it's
good
always,
idea.
Always. Anyway.
What would he say right now?
What would he say? He'd call lies and blasphemy because that's his role. He's
no, he would say.
He'd say, all right. What brings us together on Steal This Beer is a candid conversation of beer. What it is, not what we thought it would be. What it's doing, not what we were told it would do. And how it tastes, not how we got it. To facilitate that, We drink blind out of opaque glasses. Three of us are blind in this situation. As far as I know, Ian, me, and Cass are completely blind. Yes. In our artisanally foil-wrapped 16-ounce cans. I'm drinking out of a black wine glass. The both of you, Ian, is your glass clear or opaque?
It is opaque.
Okay, so you don't see color. Cass, I know you know the rules, so I assume you're good. I am going to come out here and tell you guys I completely fucked this tasting for myself unintentionally. But since we're keeping this to a tight 45, I opened both cans, put both cans into black glasses, and was just going to A and B and move through and get whatever. But I combined them at one point. So my first tasting notes while we were talking was a hodgepodge of grossness. I have since dumped, rinsed, and re-decanted, and I have clean beer now. But what I can tell you, if you guys want to do this experiment at the other end of the show, is if you add 1 to 2 and drink them, there is a screaming level of diacetyl. what's funny about that
is that because
I thought I was drinking beer one. Well, like I said, I don't want to fuck this up because we need to talk about it. Now I've straightened them out. Beer one is now a very pretty kind of lime zesty, some kind of you know, turbid mash, dried out beer. It's pretty. I'd call it a table beer, not knowing, you know, I'm not getting enough yeast character out of it because I fucked myself up, but we can get back to it. But it's very grainy. It's very pretty. It feels like a farmhouse ale. Got some nice lime zest in the ferment and it's come out. That being said, when you pour it into beer two, which does have a little touch of diacetyl to it, I've now discerned, it makes that diacetyl so bad that what I thought I was drinking beer one before I realized something had to be wrong, I thought I was drinking a little English brown that had so leaned into the potential for a little touch of diacetyl that I was going to stop drinking it. So everybody
I
might
think you might have the beers reversed though.
Yeah,
that's possible.
Yeah, there's definitely no lime zest in can.
Well, you're saying one and two. I think you got them backwards.
All right. Well, I fucked it all up.
The way you're describing it.
You're right. All right. So let me get into one. Okay. Sorry. Beer one is the one with a little diacetyl. Yes. Why don't you guys talk and tell me if you're getting it too?
I don't get the diacetyl, but it is light. It's pretty. This would have paired well with my food prep earlier this morning, and probably something you could also drink throughout the day. I find it quite sessionable. I'm almost done with my can as I cracked it before we started the show. It's got like it's definitely malty. It's got like a little roast to it, kind of that dusty thing you get in the brown. But overall,
yeah, I like the malt sweetness, like really lightly malt sweetness, but pretty in line with a I don't know, like a Newberg brown kind of level of brownness, you know what I mean? Like it's not, I don't want to use those words of, you know, malt sweetness and pronounced, you know, there is some Meyer definition, but it's super light, super drinkable, super pretty, super small. It dries out like a lager on the finish. But like I said, there's that little... And the problem is, and I do want you guys to try this at the end, is add 1 to 2 and you'll see what I mean. But it's not as bad... add 2 to 1 and you'll see what I mean about 1. But it's not as bad. Like, it was so bad together that it's fucked my palate up. Ian, what are you getting? We got to lean into you as our pro here because I'm useless.
Well, I was going to say, if you're going to do a 2 to 1 and then create something out of it, that sounds kind of like the John Hall 1.8% smoke cream.
But it was not on purpose. It was putting cans down and talking and not paying attention. But I ended
he's
up
not
a,
here, but he's a, with us.
A
in
terrible black and tan.
Yes. So when I first tasted it, I wasn't quite sure. I mean, I'm still not sure, but I was leaning towards like a mild or some sort of bitter that wasn't really didn't have enough of the hops to go along with it, because you get some of that like crystal malt flavor to it, like some of the fruit, some of the sweeter malt texture, but it was light. So I without like staring at it and thinking about it, or really actually knowing what's behind this tinfoil. I don't know. I like it. I could probably drink, you know, three or four of these, no problem. But it's a good beer to start your St. Patrick's Day off. That's for sure. But I'm with you guys.
I think that's fair. So, my problem here again, self-inflicted problem. I can't read the ABV, but if this is a sensible 4 to 5, I think you're right. This would be a great 4-pack beer to start the day with.
Mm-hmm.
If it's over 5, it's one of those ones that sets me up for failure. You know what I mean? Where it's like, oh, this is fine, but it drinks smooth, quick, and clean enough that if it's on that dangerous side of 5, it might set me up for either a nap or a whole right. day, you know. Well, or maybe, then that might be a good St. Patrick's Day, as we discussed at the top of the show.
Yeah, I'll let you guys know later for sure if there's a nap involved or not. But there's also like a little vanilla, like at the end. There's ooh, something else.
I got like a biscuit. Got a biscuit, you know.
Yeah,
kind of a buttery biscuit note.
I got the butter.
Yeah, I don't get so much diacetyl. You know, there's hints of it. I think it might be there, but it's borderline for me where it's not offensive or anything like that. Where it's like, oh boy, what happened? It's more like, I think this is supposed to be here. If this is a
bitter, a British bitter, I think it's right where it wants to be. But since I think it's a lager, we're getting into the, I don't know how much you listen to the show, but somebody planted in my head that all Czech lagers have diacetyl, and now that I see it, I can't unsee it. So if it's a Czech lager, that might be to style.
Yeah.
Since I think the Czechs claim they don't do that, we're in a gray area here, but one of the best brewers I know insists Czech style is with a little diacetyl. So maybe they nailed it.
Right. You guys kind of wrote your sentences. Do you want to know what it is, or do you want to say more?
Reveal it and tell me what it tastes like when I pour another beer into it.
This is indeed a Czech style lager. It's an amber lager from Duchess Ales. It's called Klavis 12 or 12 Klavis? Degrees. I guess 12 degrees. Klavis. Klavis.
I think it's 4.6.
Is that right? Is it
4.6?
Yeah. 5%. Oh, it's 5%. Okay.
All right. So that's definitely all right. And so why is there a skeleton on it?
I love the label.
Sure. I'll ask Mike and see why.
They brewed it at Barrier, too.
Here's what I'll tell you.
Yes, brewed at Barrier.
I think it's perfect style.
Yeah, you nailed it.
Well, I didn't nail it. I just said what Ashley said to me a year ago.
Well, then you remembered stuff.
Well, it's going to be hilarious if over time she's I never have it. Like when we do lagers, I just think kind of European or American. But if she's planted the seed in me that when you taste a little diacetyl, assume you're drinking a Czech lager. If I start looking like I know what I'm doing because of that, I probably owe her a ton of credit.
Well, this is the first time I'm ever speaking to you, and now I assume that you are a pro at all this and a pro at Czech style lagers.
No, definitely not. Okay. Anyway, let's get back to you. Let's talk about that. What do you lager when you lager? What paths do you run down?
I keep it pretty simple. I'm a ferment 52 and kind of work my way down and spend about 45 days. I don't try and go really nuts with it. I'm not. I'm a single infusion kind of guy, and as the only person in the brewery, I try to make sure that everything is streamlined and I can get it done and just focus on clean fermentation. If some hops find their way in there, that's great. If not, I'm in wine country and NASCAR country, so I can't get too wild up here without starting, you know, other breweries, you know, other names to kind of, you know, right. take it over. So, I'm a pretty straightforward, person when it comes to lagers. You know, I just want them to be clean and refreshing, and I want to see those NASCAR guys crushing them, you know, cheering on whoever their favorite racer is nice. Driving around the circle. So.
Right on. Cass, what do you do when you're driving around in circles? You know, Cass has a big driving around in circles history.
Well, I had no idea.
No, drip track. And Watkins Glen is not a circle. I'm sorry, I was getting well, yeah. here too. So I missed the what I'm being quizzed on here.
I was talking about your drifting days.
Oh, yeah. I missed them.
You were a drifter?
Well, I did a lot of filming and photography in and around the drift roads. Shout out to all my drift friends listening. If they do.
Yeah, your photography for the New York State beers were incredible. I was very impressed when you sent me those photos.
Well, thank you.
Guy takes a nice picture. You can rest easy that a lot of the media you've ever seen of me was taken by Cass.
Oh, nice.
Which is kind of hilarious. Well. Yeah, he sure does. So when you say Watkins Glen, how far up the state are you? Because I don't know. I know that name well, but I can't picture it in my head. Where are you in the giant parts of the state?
So, I mean, if you're everybody thinks New York is New York City, and I'm a Philadelphia guy. I'm not from Watkins Glen, but you know, we're a 4-hour drive to New York City.
Far.
Right. We're south of, if you know where Rochester is, I mean, we're about an hour and a half south of Rochester. So 3 hours from Buffalo. That's where we're at.
The joke there is John Hall keeps telling me I'm going to know where Rochester is because we keep swearing we're going to go up there for an event, but we never do.
Right. Well, one day.
But I've heard of a thing called a garbage plate. That's what I know.
Yes, it is garbage. Yes.
Do they make it as far as you? Can you get that local cuisine in Watkins Glen?
If you call it cuisine, I mean, you could. It's I don't know. It is exactly what it sounds like, a garbage plate. And if you like hot dogs and red sauce with beef and mac salad, then yeah, you're in for a real treat. I've had a few. That's enough.
Nice. I get it. All right, so let's talk about beer 2, which I thought was beer 1, which I added to make beer 3. It's gotten so much, so part of what I did wrong to my face, this beer is cleaning up nicely, which, assuming the, you know, making all those mistakes I made it with that first sip I had and being like, what the fuck is going on here? Do you remember I've already kind of talked about this one, but are you getting that kind of limey finish, that citrus peel finish, Cass, Ian?
Yeah, I'm getting it. It ain't lime to me though. I feel orange. Clementine.
Orange? All right.
But yeah, I mean, to me, like it's more everything is just yeast derived here as far as the flavor goes. I don't get much citrus, but it could be because I crushed that Czech style amber lager, so I don't know. That was good. I told you I would drink 4 of them if I had 4. So
that's right. Well,
this one's nice though. I like this.
Is this one available? Is that Czech lager available by you? That should like barriers. No. Not that far.
No,
I think they distribute them probably up that way.
I would have to check rights or our local guy here to see if he has that, or you know, we had a pretty decent unless they're in Wegmans. I mean, Wegmans kind of has a little bit of everything, but I've personally, from being out in the market, I have not seen this particular beer or Dutch Sales in general, but my eyes aren't open to everything, so they could be up here.
Yeah, it's when you have all your own beer between work and home, you stop going to the stores as much as you used to, I guess, right?
Oh, yeah. Yes, yeah, for sure. Don't get high on your own supply, but it's pretty easy to bring a 4-pack home, you know.
That's right. It's my favorite thing in the world.
I will say that Ironheart does not provide us with any low fills, because they pretty much can can everything up and everything's great. I'm not here tooting Ironheart's horn, but I'm saying, like,
gross.
You know. Brian didn't tell me to say that, by the way. I figured I'd say that.
I know, but he's still not going to give you a discount. Guy's a cutthroat.
Oh, business. I know. I know.
I can't get over how much I like both these beers after what I thought was in that first glass. So I'm on an emotional roller coaster over here, guys.
It reminds me of some sort of old, Ian said it was yeast driven, kind of getting like an old saison, you know, like I picked
this
up in a 22.
But like a proper one, because it's not
like Pretty Things. That... Remember Pretty Things from Massachusetts? It's reminded me of like something out of the bottle that I had from them.
That's a good call.
Or like early Amagon bombers.
You remember that phase where saison became a catch-all for, oh, it's a little bit sour. Oh, it's a little bit Brett. Oh, it's a little bit whatever. This is that kind of, you know, peppercorn finish, proper, I would even say maybe even DuPont kind of fermentation.
Yeah.
But the grain is so, like the grain bill is so clean and light and easy. Yeah, like I said, I love it. The bad news is it will make a whatever other beer scream with sweetness if you pour it into it. Anyway, my sentence for this is so this is a breakfast beer to me. Like when we talk, I know you were saying, Ian, that you like to start off with that other lagery type, the browner lager, and I agree with you that that's a fun morning afternoon beer. This one to me, because of its kind of peppery cleanliness and the fact that it feels so sprightly and easy to just crush, is the kind of thing I want to start the day with. But the problem is it's going to lead me to my bad habit of hazy hops that I'll never get back out of. You know what I mean? Because this so naturally leads into a New England that I could see my day getting lost to those. And I'm supposed to be drinking stouts today because it is St. Patrick's Day. But this one's making me crave two or three more of these, and then just a day of haze.
I remember, when you said saison DuPont, because I mean that's one of my, like, if I'm going to be dying, you know, what beers would I have? And it's in that direction for sure. It's not like nearly as dry, but it has a lot of that characteristic that hits like the things that I'm looking for. But it is definitely a gateway beer too. Hitting the hops hard later on, and the next day you're like, man, I really didn't need I didn't need those IPAs later in the day or at night. I was on a really good path to functionality, but then I thought this one's really nice. I don't know who made it yet, but I would drink more of these for sure.
Kennedy, I think it's time for you to tell us.
All right, this is another New York State beer. I didn't mean to do that, but this is from Another Moon Brewing, Matt Moon, who is the second brewer at Suarez. This is made at Suarez. This is called Mooney Ale, and he calls it, I think, let's see, what does he call it? He calls it a
hoppy saison.
It's 4.5% alcohol.
Yeah.
And it's the first beer that he's canned, I think.
Well, fun fact about this beer is that it was canned by me on our mixed culture canning line, because this beer does have some fun and funky things in it. This was also canned conditions as well.
Canned at Suarez, but not canned by Suarez.
Correct. Gotcha. Yeah, we did package what's, it there.
But... What's funny is I'm not getting any hoppiness per se. Maybe the first beer blew that out.
I don't know. Ooh. I almost want to put this in the fridge and come back to it later after maybe like
it's so. That's the praise I will give most of it, because when I unraveled my ball of twine mistake, both were still leading into the bad idea I got. But as this one, you know, because then I thought this was one, and then it was two. When I finally got around to properly drinking this at the right time, and I should have never shuffled. Try to do two things at once, but once I finally had this one alone, it really is just a pretty lovely, light, zippy.
Yeah, this is fantastic.
Yeah,
four,
I really
four and a half, per, 4.5%.
Now, shout out can to you Matt guys Moon. Do me a favor? Can you do me a favor and put a little of two into one and taste it? And
I don't have any.
See if it breaks your face in half like it did me. I warned you this was coming. podcast. How did you not save anyone for the experiment?
You know, you're right about the kind of diacetyl level mixing these two together. Like it then creates.
Do you see what I mean? Like it's
yeah. Smelling it now, it's like, wait, what am I having here? But
yeah, that's what happened to me. I was like, what has Kennedy done to me for fucking Sunday morning? But 1 + 1 equals a lot more than 2 in this case, because neither one is as bad as I thought that first glass was.
It's not the worst cuvée to start the day.
It's not the worst, but this second beer is really, really nice.
Yeah. Well, great both job. Beers were nice. Both beers were nice.
Unless
you're an idiot like Augie Carton, both beers are nice. Anyway, so let's get back to it. So, so you're still not anywhere near either of these breweries, right? Because if the first one was brewed at Barrier, that's out on Long Island. And if the second one was brewed at Suarez, that's right in the Hudson Valley, right?
Yep. So even though
we have a New York State farm brewer and 2 New York State farm beers, there's still 5 hours of commuting between all of them. Do you get to who's your neighbors? Who do you get to spend time with? Who do you lean into when you need help as a brewer?
That's a really good question. You know, I reach out to some other people outside of the area, just because I'm so, you know, for me, like I'm immersed in the area. I spend time on the New York State Brewers Association board and know everybody here. And we kind of, you know, do some similar things, do some different things. I kind of go outside of the area. Every state seems to have their thing and they're doing something different. The West Coast is totally different from the East Coast. And so if I'm able to reach out some of my mentors when I got into this game, that's where I generally go, because they're just not inside this whole circle here. So, and that's sometimes where I try to get out of. So I'm doing something different, because here on Seneca Lake, you know, we have 20 breweries just on the lake.
Is there an other half right by you? Is that the part of the world where other half opened up that third one?
It'd be at the opposite end of the lake, right?
Other half Seneca. Is, no, they're, well, they're in Canada. Bloomfield. They're about an hour,
it's
hour
Canada,
and 10 okay. away. Yeah, Canandaigua.
New York State is so fucking big.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry,
yeah,
man. I heard Finger Lakes. So I was like, oh, I know something up there.
Yeah, no, I mean, and Big Alice had moved up from New York City a few years ago, and then from the Hudson Valley, Tin Barn came up to Seneca Lake as well. We've been here all along, but before us, there was always like 2 Goats, and which is a fucking awesome place and really good beer. And then you have Wagner Valley was here before everybody else. They're primarily wine, but they've been doing it for 22 years now or something. I feel like they just had their 20th, but there's a lot of old, I don't want to say old beer, but older breweries and a lot of people still jumping into the game. And
Ithaca's not too far away either.
Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah, you got Ithaca. Yeah. Christ. I mean, how am I forgetting about Ithaca? But there's a lot of beer up here, but we get a lot of tourism that people are thirsty. And like I was saying in the beginning, you know, you want to make both of these styles, a Czech amber lager, and you want to make some sort of really nice Saison so that everybody has something to drink once they come in.
Yeah. And how much of your foot traffic is people that went up there looking for Riesling and found you versus came up looking for beer?
It's both. And the reason is, I'm not trying to say men and women, but there are people that come up for wine and there are people that come up for beer. And so they're like, well, hey, if I can drink wine all weekend, you can drink beer all weekend. So let's go there. It's kind of both now. So
does your license permit you to like grab a local neighbor's wine and offer it in your tasting room so they could do both at once? Or is that forbidden?
Absolutely. We actually have a license where if we wanted to sell Tito's, we could sell that. But we
really,
yeah, yeah, we do. We do as much local wine because there's no reason to go anywhere else. I mean, there's really good whites, really good reds, and everywhere in between. And the cider game up here in the Finger Lakes also is is really, really good. So there's some places up here that are doing really great cider as well. So, and distilleries.
An embarrassment of riches.
If you like to drink, yeah. Seneca Lake is the place to be. And I'm not a promoter for all of the Finger Lakes, but if you're trying to do any of those things or all of those things, I mean, get a driver, drive yourself around, whatever. There's plenty to offer up here outside of just a lot of booze and a lot of good, a lot of good booze and a lot of good food too. So,
well, I'll see if we can fold that into our Rochester trip.
Well, it's on the way to Rochester. That's the thing, you have to pass through. If you want to take the scenic tour, you pass through Seneca Lake as you, you know, make your way to the Roch. I'm your tour guide. I give you the.
I love when you talk to me like I understand this stuff. I can't get to your house and you're in this state. somebody has to get me where I'm going, and you know that.
Need a driver. You need a driver. That's what I'm hearing.
I just need a guide. I'm a dedicated, enthusiastic follower. I'm not a leader on the roads. Even when I ride bikes, I take somebody else's wheel and just go wherever they tell me to. But I will ride till I die. Yeah. All right, so I think we've run out of time, guys. It was real nice to have you, Ian. Hey, Kennedy, do you have a letter?
I got it.
Kennedy, Cass has a letter.
I got a split guy, so he's going to read it, and he'll take care of it.
Love you, man. Happy St. Patrick's Day. I'm surprised you carved us out 45 minutes on St. Patrick's Day with the last name Kennedy.
Yeah.
All right, go get him,
Tyler. Read
the letter. I'll do my best, and Ian and I will answer it, and we'll move on.
Yeah, Kennedy, my man, first time, long time. While a trip to Rochester would be great, I suggest that instead you raise funds to buy Augie a Rotovap. I think he's mentioned these in the past, and having tried the results, he could do great things. We didn't realize our cocktail ingredients were made using one, but immediately noticed the depth and nuance of flavor. This is from Matt Malou, by the way. Shout out to Matt here. For the question, can you please discuss batch variation, for example, Boat or some other flagship craft beer that tastes different from a previous batch, even though it uses the same recipe? Generally, are flavor changes driven by ingredient or process variations? And do you view changes in the flavor as problematic for a brand or benefit of the craft process? So, you know, obviously you guys both have flagship beers here, and I think, you know, I talk about Boat every damn show, but, you know, that's made with the same grist, same hops, same water. You get the question.
What do
you guys think?
Ian, why don't you go first? Because this is one of those questions I don't have much tolerance for.
Gotcha.
So you say nice things and talk about it, and then I'll tell them why that's just foolish.
Okay, I will say the nice stuff. So I mean, batch variations, for me, it comes down to, everything's the same. All the ingredients are the same. The equipment's the same. The temperature control, if you have some, you know, nicer software, we can control those things, then you should get the same result. But every process is not always going to be the same, especially if you're doing multiple things at the same time. And so I find that, different systems for me, like if I make a small batch of a flagship beer for whatever reason, if I'm desperate, I do it on a direct fire system versus our steam jacketed system, it's going to be different. And that's okay. I think it's kind of understood too, for brewery, at least for my size, that there is always going to be some variation. And we get people that are upset too. I started biofining our flagship lager or flagship IPA 2 years ago, and people freaked out. And it was because I wanted to do it because I wanted it to be consistent. So it wasn't hazy sometimes, or it wasn't bright sometimes. I just wanted it to be consistent so they know what Falcon Punch looks like. And people freaked out. I got emails, customers were complaining, they didn't believe that it was the same beer. And I explained to them, and it took 6 months. And that was a small variation of, you know, one batch. I don't know. It happens, but it's hard to be consistent constantly.
That's very fair and honest and wonderful. And I appreciate you. And all I will say is if you were trying to match a direct fire to a steam jacketed system for consistency and nailing it, you would be the greatest chef in the history of the world.
Oh, yeah, it's impossible.
That's a shockingly different process. So here's what I'll say. I'm not saying batch variation doesn't exist, and I think if you're a good brewer making a flagship beer, you're doing your best to control it, like Ian just said. But at certain scales and certain levels of professionalism, there really isn't, right? Like, I have a 15-barrel brew system, and a small amount of boat for me to brew is 60, right? So that's four brews together, which gives me a control a lot of people don't have, because they're either way bigger than me and only brewing once, or way smarter than me and brewing a lot less beer. But over those four, you can correct brew to brew to hit your final number for the entire volume exactly right. So yeah, there isn't going to be as much batch variation in the little niche world I have for things. And the boat you're drinking today is the boat we were making 13 years ago, and blah, 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 to talk about what Cass was saying. That being said, it's kind of that, and I'm guilty of this too as a consumer, forget a brewer, but if you, so when carton cans of beer, we write journey began on the bottom, right? We don't say, you know, brewed on or released on or drink by, we say journey began, because we aren't pasteurizing, we are making a live thing, and it's got a progression. But it comes down to that adage of there's no good wine, just good bottles, because every path is different and every story can evolve a living thing. So more often than not, what people are declaring, because their face is so fucking perfect at tasting, is not comprehending the variations that happen in a thing, right? So in the same time slice, under the exact same conditions, every boat's going to be exactly the same. If it's 3 day old and never left my fridge for 13 years, that 3 day old never left my fridge beer is going to be that boat that tastes that way that day. But things do progress. And what's funny is, further you are from the source in all beer is how much time it traveled and what exposure it can have, right? Like when people mail you a beer from Wisconsin to New Jersey in January, that beer has been down to 20 and back up to 45, whether you like it or not. These are the things that force changes in can and bottle. And then there's your own face, right? It's a Sunday morning, you haven't eaten yet, versus it's your fifth beer tonight. So more often than not, what people call batch variation, especially when they're trying to be these kind of know-it-all drinkers, is them not taking their own inventory before they even start. Did I have garlic with dinner? Did I have peppers with dinner? Did I have artichokes with dinner? All the things that change the way you taste. So I'm not saying there isn't batch variation, or there is. I am saying more often than not, perceived differences in certain beers are, like, we see it. I've had beers, people call me up because a beer flocked, like completely everything fell out of it. And they're like, I've had boat 50,000 times. It never looks like this. And I'm like, well, you know, it's July. It's 100 degrees out. We drop the beer off at 38 degrees out of a van. If it sits on their dock and goes up to 60 degrees because it's 100 degrees out, and then they put it in the back of their fridge next to a fridge and it goes right back down to 30, no matter how well preserved everything is, everything's going to fall out of that. And that happens. You know what I mean? And it's not going to hurt you. It's not a big deal, and it shouldn't change much, but it will change. But that's not a batch variation. That's a handling in a certain situation that had five things go wrong instead of one. You know what I mean? So I don't know. If you have a flagship beer and you have a name on it, you should do your best to make it consistently the same every time. And I... Hello?
Nope. Hello? I thought you sound like you're breaking up there.
They're breaking up there.
So, that's hilarious. All right. Well, speech over. Well, all right, y'all.
Yeah.
Guys,
well,
tell them how to give us money.
Well, hold on, Ian. Where can I find you guys on the social medias there?
Yeah, good call.
Well, yeah, I just want to say everything you said, I agree with you. And it was well said. Yes, I think I took the nicer route, but I wasn't thinking about the grand overall scale of batch variation and everything like that. So
It's more often than not what people are perceiving as batch variation is they had a Florida beer in Maine without asking how it got there.
I see. Yeah, I'm like, well, the brewing process and your temperatures could be
Bullshit. It's like the bullshit of Guinness being different in Ireland. Is it better in Ireland? Of course. Because vacation, because you're there, because they serve it at the right temperature and all that. It's still the same fucking beer. It's not a different beer. Right, and I was like, no, it's batch variation. It's totally different. They make it differently everywhere. No, they fucking do. Anyway.
It's like, well, stop. Yeah. And then and then they go outside and start vaping and they're like, wow, well, I'm going
to. I can't imagine. This time I get a little more black cherry vape. Anyway.
Yeah.
Right.
Anyway.
It is St. Patrick's Day. We got to go drink it. So where do we find you?
You can find, well, I'll probably still be at my house, but you can find us on social media. Yeah, Facebook and Lucky Hair Brewing, and obviously the same thing for Instagram as well. Don't go to our website. We're revamping it beginning tomorrow. Go to it, you know, in a couple of weeks. And that's luckyhairbrewing.com. And we're here in upstate New York. Finger Lakes, Rochester. When you come up here, you'll see our beer up there as well, and the Philadelphia market as well. So we're trickling some beer down there, which is a lot of fun, considering that's where I'm from. So, nice. You guys are great. I appreciate your time, Brian. I guess I get to see you in a couple of days, huh?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Enough about that. Go ahead, Kennedy. Sorry. Go ahead, Cass. Tell them how to give us money on St. Patrick's Day.
At patreon.com/stealthisbeer. Follow us on all the social media that steal this beer, except for X, because we don't do that shit. See what we're drinking on Untappd. We're going to check these lovely New York beauties in here. And if you'd like to write us letters, that's stealthisbeerpodcast@gmail.com.
All right, y'all. Get at us.